I think that's Avi. Is it Avi?
It is indeed, Sir Paul. And you know what? I'm just brewing my first cup of coffee today, and I am looking forward to having our little get-together today. Can you hear me clearly, sir?
You're coming through about 9.5 out of 10, Avi.
Well, that sounds great to me. I think I can't do better than that. So I'm pouring my first cup, and hopefully you have your cup of brew in front of you. Or, hey, it's 3 p.m. out where you are. You might be into your first your bottle, right? Your first pint.
Oh, Avi, come on. 3 o'clock in the morning. I know Irish people are stereotyped into, you know, any old excuse, you know, and they'll open a bottle.
Well, hey, you know, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, as they say. So, Paul, this is a long overdue conversation. I'm so looking forward to it. And because of your vast experience in podcasting, I don't know if you want to stick in that vein of discussion or whether you'd like to talk about, you know, something else. So I'm going to let you do it as the senior member of this conversation. Not too much more senior than me, I'm sure. But certainly you lead the discussion, and I'm happy to engage.
Well, Avi, we are both belong to the charts. We're both in the top 10 of what has been called Old Farts of Anchor.
Yeah, of course.
OFOA.
OFOA. A very prestigious club indeed.
By the way, I decided I'd wait until we got on the line to actually boil the kettle. I'm going to have a cup of tea because I've already had 2 cups of coffee today.
Well, that's probably a good idea. But, you know, I understand. What type of tea do you drink?
Well, I drink tea, which is brand the local supermarket. It's called Original Blend Tea Bags by Super Value. And it's not my favorite. I'm really cheesed off because this company, Super Value, used to do a very basic tea, strong, not perfumed in any way, even the slightest. And anyway, they don't supply that anymore. And I've had to buy this particular one, which is, I would say, second class in comparison with the first class tea that is no longer available.
Well, that's interesting. You know, tea, from my understanding, has more or as much or more caffeine in it than as coffee. So while you may be drinking tea to eliminate some of the caffeine effect, it probably it keeps me up more than coffee does when I drink it. I oftentimes stay up at night. So I stick to the coffee most of the time.
Well, neither of them keep me up. I don't know what effect either of them are meant to have on me. But I believe you're absolutely right. And I'd say an awful lot of people think that tea has less caffeine than coffee.
Yeah, yeah. Now, herbal teas, they don't have caffeine.
Oh, and, that's true.
You know, I'm going to drink something to put you to sleep, like a chamomile tea would probably do the trick. But I'm not a tea expert, believe it or not. But I have an affinity for healthy, organic eating. So I oftentimes can be asked questions about that. And that's something I do a lot of and have recommendations. And I'm kind of upset because there's a company that I've been using for years. Here in the States, they're based out of Florida. They're called Garden of Life. I don't know if you've ever heard of that company.
Nope, never heard of them.
They make herbal organic supplements as well as protein powders. I drink their protein shake every morning, and it's actually a meal replacement. I've been doing that for several months now. And the fact is they were just bought out or acquired by the Nestle company. And you're familiar with the international Nestle company.
Of course, of course.
Now, Nestle is the contradiction of an organic company. They are very deep into GMO usage, and they're not necessarily of the same philosophy as a company that such as Garden of Life, who has every motivation to create healthy foods and stay away from GMO. So it's going to be an interesting combination. And it's amazing. There was a post that the company did, Garden of Life, on Facebook yesterday. And as a result of that post, their customer base went ballistic on them. They said, there's no way you're selling out to the company. They just can't believe, because Garden of Life says it's going to be a benefit to their company because they have an influx of an international company that's going to really be supportive of them. But every one of their customers is saying, no way, they're going to liquidate your brand. They just want to get rid of you as competition, and they're going to eat you up, and they're never going to be the same. So it's an interesting thing, you know, when companies get acquired, Paul, isn't it?
Well, there's a, excuse me. There's a pattern to this, Avi. There seems to be a trend in which big brands, which need to soften their image and present a picture as if they were more socially responsible or more green or more healthy, purchase small brands, niche brands, and they say, of course, well, we ain't going to change anything about this company. Like a great example over here, I don't know if you've ever heard of a company called Cadbury.
Oh, yes.
Cadbury are big chocolate.
Yeah, they're really famous this time of year, especially Easter time with their Cadbury eggs, right?
They're basically, in my mind, they're basically a sugar company that suspends the sugar in brown stuff that's called chocolate.
Exactly.
Right? So basically, right. Now they bought a company called Green and Black. Green and Black are the best makers of chocolate up there, producing 80%, 90%, 70% of what do you call the stuff that you use? Cocoa. In their chocolate, dark chocolate.
Oh, yeah. I love their dark chocolate. It's terrific, yes.
Top class. And they were bought. And the similar thing, you know, how could you go, you know, get into bed with the enemies? Let's put it that way. And I know of several other companies that have done the same thing. I think McDonald's bought somebody that not that very long ago, a niche company that's completely different. It has happened in brewing.
It must be that battery, Paul. Is it the battery on your phone?
No, I've got enough. I've got enough.
Oh, terrific.
Suddenly died. Yeah, unless it had something to do with my ear pressing a button by accident.
That's always possible, but I'm glad. I actually called you back from my iPhone. This actually sounds more clear to me than the previous call, so that's a little better. I was on my Android phone when I called you first because I thought I'd get a little better quality, but I hear you much more clearly now, so that's good. So we left off with the big companies taking advantage of the smaller niche companies. We talked about Cadbury. You talked about Green and Black. And, you know, has it affected Green and Black's quality?
No, I don't think it's affected the quality of their chocolate. What it has done, though, is transform the Green and Black brand into much more mainstream. So instead of being a challenger brand with all the, you know, ethos attached to that, it's, I think, probably become a subsidiary brand, if you like. It's almost as if I haven't done the research, but it's almost as if the passion has gone out of it and the mission has gone out of Green and Black, and it's just another dark chocolate company.
That's interesting. Well, you know, I fear that could potentially happen with Whole Foods here in this country. Do you have a Whole Foods anywhere in the European states? Do you know? Or is that
is Whole Foods an organic chain?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. We don't have that. I've spoken to a number of people about it, though, in the past, and I believe there are some really attractive stores that they have. Over here, you get organic as a very small section of mainstream supermarkets.
Got it. Well, I predict that Whole Foods will likely become international because Amazon
has acquired Whole Foods this past year. And it's an interesting combination of a mass online retailer, number one in the world, with a brick and mortar store that didn't really have an online presence to any great extent. And now Amazon can take advantage of the brick and mortar to do a number of things that makes it a beneficial combination. I don't know that Amazon will liquidate Whole Foods in that manner as some of these other companies that do similar things will do to their brands. I mean, if Amazon was in the supermarket chain industry, it might be interesting. But the fact that Amazon has deep pockets and has the ability with an infrastructure to make a supermarket chain even more attractive because of its ability to bring online presence to them, to bring value to them. Whole Foods has always been known as, they call it, the nickname is Whole Paycheck because they charge about 2.5 times the price of what a standard supermarket does in the States here. Not only because their quality of food is normally higher, but in addition, their presentation is so much more interesting. They really take care in making their stores look really, really attractive to the buyer. They seem to have a higher scale buyer, but the people that want to eat organic aren't necessarily rich. You know, you have a lot of people that Yes. can't afford to eat well. So that's where Amazon comes in because they immediately lowered prices on certain products. They reduced prices on, say, organic apples. I know you could pay a lot per pound for Whole Foods traditional organic apples, but they've brought the price down tremendously. So it's an interesting combination there. But, well, you know, it's a look-see. We have to find out. But it was just an interesting thing that came up, and I think we're going to be seeing more and more of it. And we see it all the time in technology companies. Geez, you know, you have the smaller technology companies, such as a company like Anchor, that could potentially be a great acquisition by a larger company that wants to take advantage of the technology that they're producing. And that's always been an issue and a talking point for many of us here on Anchor to see where Anchor's headed. How are they going to monetize this particular company? So it's an interesting possibility.
Well, when you buy a niche company, we'll say, I reckon you're buying at least two things. You're certainly buying the association with their quality product. You're also buying the skills that niche company has. You see, you're buying a skill set. And indeed, there have been many examples of companies in the tech industry, you know, who have bought the company and basically killed the brand, but incorporated the people into their own organization. And like, for example, the food company we're talking about, who's terrifically good on presentation, one of the weak areas for Amazon is their presentation. Their packaging, for example, when you get a product from Amazon, it's very uninteresting.
Well, that's one way to keep their prices down for sure, right?
Well, loss leaders, that strategy is widely used, isn't it? Bring down the price of apples, bring people into your store, yeah, and they'll buy pears.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So they have an interesting strategy, but they also have quite huge buying power in being an international company and having a wholesale mentality. It brings an interesting light to it. But what I fear and what I feared is that they could lower the quality of the, quote, Whole Foods brand by bringing in these less expensive type solutions that aren't necessarily the top quality products that people are used to. So anything can happen from that standpoint, but maybe it could be a good thing. It could be something that could affect the brand. But right now, I think they're doing quite well. But it's interesting because eventually the Whole Foods brick and mortar will become a depot for the ability for people to bring returns that they buy online from Amazon. They can take it to the supermarket and return it there. So it gives Amazon that retail style presence that they never had. And it's an interesting possibility. They have most of the stores that Whole Foods have now are 50,000 square foot type stores. They've been buying properties that are bigger and more expansive, and they have the ability to offer some of this additional space that may be fruitful for them, for Amazon depots.
Which coast of the United States are they mainly on? Are they mainly on East Coast?
They're all over the country now, but they started, I believe, on the West Coast, and then they branched outward. So there's Whole Foods all up and down the East Coast, expanding all the time. We have a number of Whole Foods in the Philadelphia area, in New Jersey and New York. They're all over the place up to here. They in Florida, they have a number of locations. They don't have as many as you would find a standard supermarket chain might have or a national chain, but they certainly are going into rural areas as well that have, a population that would be interested in that type of demographic where they're interested in organic foods. You don't in areas that may not be, So it's interesting.
I think Amazon, the bricks and mortar stores that Amazon has already, it began in Seattle, didn't it? And it that's the first place that they had a bricks and mortar store.
Well, it could be, yeah. They wanted to put in some automated type shops where they've been experimenting with those, where there's actually very few personnel. It's all done through automation, where you would walk in, if you have a Prime account, you could check in and walk out, and all of your products would be identified and ordered and checked out without you having to see a cashier. So it's interesting. That is a great new philosophy, and they may be able to apply that technology to the supermarket environment. Wouldn't that be great? One of the biggest bottlenecks in a supermarket is walking through the checkout line with all of your goods, right?
And you can turn a supermarket into a place I can dash in, buy three products, and get back to my car while leaving the engine running.
Exactly. That is the beauty of it. And I've always thought that RFID would be able to supply that capability where you can put things in your own bag, walk through a scanner, and it would identify everything in your bag and check you out, and you would have a card on file with the supermarket. Boom, you're done. They've gotten close. I work with one company here. Giant is another food chain here in the States that offers you the ability to walk around with a scanner. I understand in Europe they've had this for several years, but you can actually scan your own products as you put them in your bag, and you walk out through the checkout line. You don't have to check out through a cashier. You could just scan the scanner that you've used. It creates a barcode at the end. They scan that. It automatically checks you out, and you just pay, and you're done. So I really like that. Yeah. I love that approach. Yeah. But it could take it a step further and have RFID identify all your products without you even scanning them. The challenge is with produce, where you have to weigh it and you have to do things. But that can also be done through doing your own weighing. You could weigh, which we do now. We weigh on a scale. It could produce a RFID tag, and that could also be identified for checkout as well. So there are ways to approach it, and I think it could only get more and more streamlined. You could even have an app on your phone, walk in and have that store's app be able to communicate with the store's Wi-Fi signal and be able to integrate with their back end. So there's a lot of different approaches. Technology will make our lives easier. That's my always approach. Yeah,
you could photograph your apples and it would be automatically.
Exactly. Yeah,
have a method by which they could weigh your apples by visual imagery, which then tells them, well, look, there are 9 apples in there and the average weight of apples is X. Therefore, that's how much you owe us.
Why not? Well, speaking of that, Paul, you weighed in on my paperless concept yesterday. So before we go, let's talk a little bit about your aversion to going paperless a little bit and maybe some of your affinity for paper, because I know you're an avid book reader and you also love paper. You have your moleskin for your notes, and these are things that you would not want to give up. But, in the scheme of things, what's going on with you with paper and not paper and all that?
Well, first of all, Abby, I have to say, although I have this sense of humor, it's not always obvious that I'm talking tongue in cheek. I did begin, if I remember rightly, saying, look, you know, bring back the fountain pen, bring back ink, bring back the pencil. And, you know, if I actually, you probably remember inkwells with the pens that had steel nibs that you dipped into the inkwell. I'm going back now really to my childhood, first pens that we used. So I
remember them. We wrote the Declaration of Independence with those, but I, that was a little bit before my time.
Yeah. That was early calligraphy at a young age over here, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
But no, in relation to a paper, very seriously, I do, the way I work in everywhere, including when I'm talking to my wife, is that I use a Moleskine notebook and I use it for writing down, you know, here are the five things you need to do today. All of my business is done in terms of me taking notes in a Moleskine notebook. So, and I have huge numbers of Moleskine notebooks in my library. So basically I'm, you know, I tried all the systems in the past, including, you know, having a notebook for one topic, a notebook for another. I don't have filing cabinets. I do write my poetry in notebooks. I do a little bit of dictating via audio and getting text out of it. I'm really the only paper that I'm surrounded with, to be honest, is I use the backs of envelopes in order to jot down, here are the four things I need to do today. And that's kind of freshly written down, maybe after breakfast. And these are just, and even to work out the logistics of, I need to go to the west of the city, then I need to go back to the east and then into the center, or even, you know, 10 o'clock to save me. Actually, it's as much to imprint it in my memory because everything is in my iPhone calendar.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's something to be said with that because there is a tactile hand to brain type effect that you don't necessarily get when you're typing something or speaking something in there. There's definitely a memory in graving type environment with that type of approach. But what I'm thinking, though, is let's say, for example, the Moleskine concept. I love the fact that you're mobile, you're able to write your notes down. But now the question is, how do you organize all of these Moleskine notes that you have? You obviously have a number of different books. How do you keep track of what's in what page the notes are on, and how do you assemble that information again after you're done?
Right, I'll tell you how I do it. Let's just imagine, for sake of argument, that my newest Moleskine notebook began on the 12th of October. So on each page of my, I use the A5 size Moleskine notebooks, by the way, but and they're lined. So I put the day and the date on the top of the page. I also write, like, for example, if I was going to meet you, I would put Avi on top of the page and I would then make notes of our conversation. There are very few conversations I have that I don't keep notes at. I mean, this is fairly unusual for me to have a phone call without keeping notes. I just literally run them almost as if they're a diary, and they're as much to help me remember. So I'll do that. Then if there's an action to be done, in the conversation or in the thing, I use highlighting pens and I circle the action. So if it was phone Avi next week, I would have that circled in a highlighting pen. And I would then, when I did phone you next week, I give a big tick in that circle. So I can flick back through my Moleskine notebook and see which action points I haven't completed. On top of that, I use one color for commercial matters. In other words, if you and I were, if I was supplying a service to you, for sake of argument, or you were supplying a service to me, so it's basically a business transaction, I will use one color, a green highlighter, so I can flick through my notebook and see every page that has things, has the topic highlighted on the top in green. That's money. In, money out. The shopping lists are in a different color, and you know they simply get ticks as well. So my Moleskine notebook is full of highlights, things being circled. Also, I do a lot of diagramming. I'm not a standard Tony Buzan type mind mapper. I'm not do that, but I draw diagrams when in the middle of conversations, and you know, I invent. I've used modeling. What I mean by that is that literally, I had a conversation yesterday morning, and I wrote down on it, you know, product and service. That's the first thing you have to produce. The second thing you have to do is marketing. So they're both in squares. The third thing you have to do is prepare to deliver. That's another square. The fourth thing is delivery. And the fifth thing is invoice. So there's a five-step process in just, I was talking to somebody about, you know, what we have to do, a very simplified thing. And I kind of make those things up out of my head as we go along. So that's a little, I don't know, is that clear enough?
No, absolutely. It sounds like you have quite a great system there. The challenge for me would be, if I wanted to go back a year from now and say, I want to see all the conversations I had with Avi. Okay, you have quite a job to do, because you have to go through a number of different notebooks. You have to look for the highlighting, and you have to look for my name on each page. And if you had the opportunity to go in and say, search A-V-I-E, boom, and every note that you ever created from the beginning of time came up on a screen, to me, that would be a much more efficient approach, when in fact you could have used the input of the Moleskine and then gotten it into a system that would automate that whole thing for you. And then you could see every piece of information, search on every word, and have that ability. So I could potentially see you scanning your Moleskine notes into a system that would do an OCR or a conversion of what you've written to text, and then have that ability. And quite honestly, you could do that with your iPad. You have an iPad, don't you?
No, I do have an iPad, Avi, but I must be the only person in the whole world who has an iPad 1, the first iPad.
Oh, okay. Well, we
and
need to get,
use it really. I'll tell you who does that. What you've just described is Bernie Goldbach.
Of course, yeah.
And now, Bernie has showed me his system. You see, to a certain extent, I think it depends upon what kind of a personality you have and what way your brain works.
Oh, I agree.
I can find the relevant Moleskine notebook terribly easily, because I can go to, you know, the six notebooks I used in 2013, they're there, and
right.
They're after the 2012 ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I can go to approximately the month it was in. Now, I know your system is much more exact. It's much more, in one sense, but even, you see, to a certain extent, I think it depends upon how much, what value you put on your time. Now, I actually have, I can, because of my circumstances, I can move more slowly than some people. In other words, I can actually drink a cup of coffee while I'm looking for my particular thing for Avi, because frankly, I don't need to get to anything really quickly. And, you know, the time I take looking for something is time I am preparing for what will happen when I find it.
Well, that's very good. Well, you're very introspective. You take advantage of the thoughtful time that you have to be able to do your research. And it's interesting. Look, everyone has their need. And that's why I say there's no cookie cutter approach for everyone. There is for me, only the exposure, because some people do things the quote old fashioned way, just because that's the only way they know. And when they're exposed to a way that might work for them more effectively, they say, oh, a light bulb goes off, and they say, wow, I didn't know I could do this. Now, once they're exposed to that and they compare one to the other and say, you know what, I'm just more satisfied, I'm more comfortable, I'm rather efficient in my own light with the way I'm doing it, fine. I never persuade someone to do something differently than what they're comfortable doing, but they need to be, quote, aware of the opportunity. And you're aware, you know, that Bernie's doing similar things to you, but in a more automated way. And you chose not to do that. And that's cool with me. I have never forced anyone to do something in a technical way that they can get away with. And quite honestly, I feel more comfortable with your approach to the extent that it's working for you very effectively. And you have a very good manual system. Now, some people don't have an organizational schema like you do. You're actually automating to a great extent the manual approach, where you're able to quickly index and identify based on color coding, based on the formatting that you're using, and it works for you. So I'm very comfortable with that. So no issues at all.
I've have a whole succession of things that I now regard as failures. I actually see, I mean, I use the word failure, even though lots of people avoid it. But my whole life is a succession of failures as far as I'm concerned. And that the reason when something fails, I move to the next level. But I have used briefly a marvelous app, which is called Evernote. Now, Evernote is so brilliant that, for example, I can photograph the receipts I get for all my business expenses, and they go straight into my accounts, you know, without any need for intervention of any kind. I can just, you know, I put petrol in my motor car. I can just photograph that that bill, that receipt, and it goes into my motoring without any problem. Evernote is, I think, one of the most versatile pieces of software. You can make up lists for, you know, what you need to do. You can use it as a checklist. I cannot think very easily of any app which is, in my experience, better than Evernote.
It's a great app. Yeah, no question about it. I subscribe to it. I like it. You can use a product like Zapier. I don't know if you're familiar with Zapier, but Zapier, nope. Zapier can take any posts that you do. For example, it can do a number of things, but it's kind of if this, then that on steroids. So if this, then that is a free app that allows you to do if something happens, then do this. But Zapier has all types of functional widgets in it that you can say, for example, anytime I post to Facebook, I want that post to appear in Evernote, and it'll automatically take it from Facebook and post it into Evernote, which is kind of
neat. That's very clever.
Clever. So there are a lot of different automated schemas that you can use to make those types of things happen, and it's pretty sweet. So yeah, Evernote's been a grand app for years, and it does many, many great things. So it's a part of that paperless arsenal that people can use. And it's a great strategy. Paul, I've loved our conversation today. We must do this again, because I think it's interesting, the different topic matter that we can come up with and engage in. However, I could do this all day with you. The challenge is our limitations on time. So,
Avi, one final question.
Absolutely.
A really short one.
Sure.
How much of your coffee have you drunk while we have been speaking?
That entire mug of coffee has been gone for quite some while, and I switched over to my water. So I was able to engage in that one cup, and that's probably enough for me for the whole day, because I normally don't drink caffeinated coffee. I drink a product called Ticino. I don't know if you've ever heard of Ticino.
No.
It's an herbal coffee, similar to your tea. It comes in a tea bag format, but you can brew it. But the Ticino tea bags come in different flavors. I often use a vanilla nut or a hazelnut or even a dandelion version of that. And it's an interesting herbal mix. It's got chicory in it. It's got different flavors. And I normally brew that. I have that after my meals for lunch and dinner. And along with an apple, some walnuts, some raisins, it's a delicious combination. Many people can't acquire a taste for it. But for those people that don't want the caffeine of coffee, some people have found that to be an interesting substitution because it tastes similar to coffee, yet it's a quick, efficient way to brew right in your cup, just like a cup of tea. So it's an option, and it also offers some gluten-free opportunities for those that are watching out for any gluten content. So it's a great little product. It's Ticino, T-E-E-C-I-N-O. So that's something that's available in your herbal food market. They have it at Whole Foods. They have it in your local grocer. I don't know if it's available in Ireland, but you might want to look into it.
The next time we speak, Avi, I'll tell you if I have it.
Okay, that's terrific. And I look forward to it. Maybe we can do this on a semi-regular basis, Paul, because I think this is an interesting conversation and always enjoy your input because you have a wealth of experience. And we'll come up with a different topic next time and see what we can talk about. How about that?
That is exactly what I'd love.
Fantastic. Paul, I look forward to it. Thanks so much for your time. Hope you have the rest of a great Wednesday. And we're doing a Welcome Wednesday. The next call you're going to hear is with a newbie to Anchor who started in Anchor version 1, and he's come back to 2, and he started a new business. And it's interesting. You'll hear a little bit about what Jeff has to offer. So look forward to that. And we're going to post this call first. Okay, my friend?
Thank you very much, Avi.
I'll get you to
all the best.
I'll get you to bye-bye. Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
Bye.